Okay, good morning. Shalom Aleichem. Freilich and Chanukah. Unfortunately, that's the last time we can share those words together for Chanukah Tavshin Pei Beis. It is Zois Chanukah. Zois Chanukah is reflected in the Kriyas Torah for today. Zois Chanukah is the eighth day of Chanukah, and there is special power that is given to the eighth day of Chanukah that I just wanted to reflect upon for a moment before we begin Sefer Shoftim. The Torah tells us, "Bizos yavo aharon el hakodesh." It's with this, bizos, with this, Aaron comes into the kodesh. So the Chazal tell us, the Rebbe tell us that on top of the words, if everyone ever noticed, on top of the words, we say in Yamin Noraim, in Nisana Tokef, Utshuva, Utfila, Utsidaka. So on top of there, if you want to take out a pen and paper, you can write this down. The words, anyone know what three words appear on top of those words? Tshuva, tefillah, tzedakah. What? Kol, tzom, and mamon. Kol, tefillah, your voice. Tzom, fasting, tshuva. And mamon, your money that you give to tzedakah. The gematria of each one of those words is 136. Okay. Kol is, you know, Kuf Vav Lamed, 136. That's the easiest one. Psalm 90. Vav Mem 40. 136. Mamon's 136 also. 136 times 3. What is 136 times 3? You know, the
408.
408. Now listen to this. Bizos. With Zos, Zion Aleph Tuf, Aaron is able to go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. What is the Koach of Zos? What's the Gematria of Zos? 408. Okay, Mendy, am I right? 408.
Yeah.
So Chazal tell us that it's the Koach of Zos that gives Aaron the ability to go into Kodesh HaKadoshim. It's the Kol, the Mammon, and the Tefillah. Not his personal tefillah, tshuva, and tzedakah, but it's the tshuva, tefillah, and tzedakah of Klal Yisrael that gives Aaron the koach, the strength, the chizuk, to go into and to enter the zone of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And that's where we find ourselves today. Zos Chanukah is another bezos moment. It's a day of tshuva, tefillah, and tzedakah. It's a day of sincere and heartfelt tefillah, calling out to a Kadosh Baruch Hu. There are those that say that today is a day where the entire, everything's processed. The judgment on Rosh Hashanah, the Chasima, gets mailed on Hoshana Rabbah. And when is everything finally processed in this bureaucratic system? Is on Zos Chanukah. Truth is, it's not bureaucratic. It's full of Rachmanis and Chemla and compassion and mercy. But it's all finished today. So today is our last moments, our last efforts for tefillah to change our year and change our lives. I saw a beautiful skula, not sure where it comes from, but I heard of it. It's a beautiful school nonetheless, is that when you take your menorahs and you put them away for the year, which is last night is like the saddest part for me of Chanukah, is when you slowly see all the candles, going away and going out. And I almost, like last night, we had a Chanukah party in the house. I didn't let people walk near the menorah when there was like three candles left, because I was afraid, like just them walking by the candles. It was Yotei the Mitzvah. It was a few hours later, but I just wanted them to go out on their own. And I mean, they did. It just, you see slowly the smoke, like just going away and, you know, going into the air and dissipating. And it's sad. It's it. So we still have today. It's a beautiful skula to take a few moments on Zos Chanukah and write a note, like you write in the Kotel, to write a note to Kadosh Baruch Hu of all the things that personal bakashos, things that you want, you need, you ask for, beseech for from a Kadosh Baruch Hu, for you, a shidduch, for others, parnasa, clarity, whatever it might be. And you write it, and you attach it to your menorah. and you put the menorah away. And when you come back next year, Tafshin Pei Gimel, as Hashem was going to take this a little bit longer than usual, because we have the Yibur Shana, you look back and reflect at that letter. And they say, they're amazing nisim v'niflos that happen when people see that letter 1 year later. Okay, let's continue with another miracle. The miracle of the conception of Shimshon. The miracle of Shimshon is the very fact that he is born. We learned last week that the very nature of Shimshon and who he was miraculous. We learned that his mother was somebody that is ranks and files and amongst the other great women of Tanakh, that is a akara velo yalada. She was somebody that was an akara on one hand. She was an akara and she did not give birth. We discussed why that double language, akara velo yalada. We'll see another interpretation today. And we discussed the complex nature of the relationship between Manoach and Eshes Manoach, and how it was complex, it was complicated. And maybe that plays into the complexity of the nature of Shimshon himself. So let's begin. Really, we have to learn this whole episode in one fell swoop. We're going to take it bits and pieces at a time, but it's a continuous running flow of a story. So we'll go back and forth a little bit in the story itself. So the Navi tells us, we'll start with Pasuk Beis again. Mitzira u'mishpacha zadani u'shma manoach v'ishto akara v'lo yelada. There's a man named from Tzira, from Dan. His name was Manoach, and his wife was an akara. V'lo yelada. And she did not have any children. So I saw, just fascinating, it's a double language. Barren and didn't have children. So this is to emphasize the miracle that was going to happen, that was about to occur, that she was going to experience a tremendous miracle with having a child. And that miracle was not going to be singular in nature. It wasn't going to be a one-time moment in history where she was going to have a child. Chazal say, Gemara Baba Basra tells us that Shimshon was born to Eshes Manoach, and then sometime later she had a daughter, to show that this wasn't going to be a one-time moment in nature where Hashem just opened up her womb and then closed it back up. But now with this miracle, she was able to have more children. And that's huge in general, because we see that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, once he gives the ability for a nace to happen, it makes it easier for other things, other miracles to flow as a result of that. Vayar Malach Hashem, she sees, she's in the field. Vayera Malach Hashem el Ha'isha, Vayomer Elaha, a Malach comes to her and says to her, Vayomer Elaha, Hinena at Akara, I see you are barren, you don't have any children, and you're going to have a child, Mazel Tov, you're going to have a child. But there are going to be restrictions with this child. Vata, Hishamrina, Baltishti Yayin Veshechar. You can't drink wine, or it's not really beer. It's anything that's rooted in wine. Anything that's alcoholic, a beverage of wine, she can't drink. Batochli kol tameh, and she can't drink anything that is also tameh. Kihina chora, because you're going to have a child, you can't shave his head, can't cut his hair. Because ki nizir alokim yanar mina beten, next week we'll discuss the nature of this Nazirus and what was this nature of the Nazirus. Meaning, was this he a real Nazir? Or is Nazir Shimshon a Nazir mi betem, a Nazir from the womb? Is that like a totally different type of Nazirus in general? What's funny here, the language that's used is Va'ata Hishamrina Vatishti Yayin. He can't eat any Tameh. The truth is, it's not something tamei. It should be something that's usser. It's prohibited to him. Wine, right, or wine derivative, wine products coming from grapes, are not tamei to him. They're usser to him. So why does the Navi use the language of tuma as opposed to a dover usser? So the Ben Yehoyada says something fascinating. He says that, you know, being a Nazir is very difficult. Why is it difficult? Because yesterday I was able to have some grapes at the Hanukkah party. Yesterday I was able to put some raisins in my salad. And now all of a sudden I become a Nazir. And now I have to train myself to go away and really not ingest any grape products. So that by nature is very difficult because it's something we're so used to. Chazal say the same idea by chametz. Chametz, we're so strict with chametz in all the halachos that even a crumb of a crumb of a crumb that falls in to our big pot of soup makes the whole soup not kosher. Why? Because it's something that we're so accustomed to. So says the Ben Yehoyada something amazing. That the Malach was teaching Mrs. Manoach that if you want to be somebody that is going to keep this mitzvah, you have to treat the raisins and the grapes and all those products as something that's tame. That you need to just stay away from it. That you can't even touch it. Because if we allow you to touch it, then what might happen? You might end up coming to drink it, or you might end up coming to eat it. So you're right. Tuma is not, it's not usher to touch it, but we're going to make a fence around the mitzvah of Naziris, and we're going to make everything that's usher to a Nazir also tame to prevent you from violating the Isser of Tuma. That's fascinating because this is very similar to Muksa. What was the goal of Muksa? The goal of Muksa was the same idea. Can I touch the pen technically? What's wrong with touching a pen? I'm not doing anything. But if I pick up the pen, I use the pen 6 days a week, not 7 days a week. Well, I don't know. Many days, I don't know. How often do we use a pen these days? Not as often as we used to. Right? And if I speak to a younger generation, they'll probably say, what's a pen? Or once in a while, I use a pen. So,
Rabbi,
yes.
So, why are grapes forbidden to a Nazir? They're not alcoholic. Grape juice is not alcoholic. On the same products, there are other things that are forbidden. Are they derivatives of things that are also prohibited?
It's a great question. So why are grape products prohibited if they're not alcoholic? Right. So that within itself, the Gemara says, that within itself is a fence around the wine. Schor, schor, the Gemara says, that we put a fence around the Nazir's life, so to speak, and around certain products to prevent him from violating it. So this would be like a fence around the fence. Because, I mean, the Torah prohibits it, and the Torah's, it's a fence from the Torah, which is very rare that happens, that we consider a mitzvah from the Torah to be a protection. But maybe this is a construct in general that the rabbis learn from here, that sometimes we need to put protection around some of our mitzvos. And this is why all grape products and grape derivatives are also prohibited.
Rabbi,
yes.
So when Adam, he was the first person that kind of tried to make a geder, and he really went afoul. It was when he told Chava. Wasn't he creating a geder?
Wasn't he creating a geder? Yeah, he was creating a geder. The way that it was taught, I would say like this. The way that it was taught was that it was the halacha. It wasn't the geder. And that is the challenge. Because we need to teach and educate what the halacha is and what is a mitzvah deraisa, what's a mitzvah derabanan, what's a minhag. When it's taught that way, then Chava would have said, oh, I bumped into the tree. No big deal, right? I touched the pen. I didn't write Mechal Shabbos. Now, that's important. like that educational piece is very key. I think that's very important. I don't know if it was lacking or not, but it's very important for Rebbeim and teachers when they're teaching children the halachos, right? At a certain point, we need to distinguish between the levels. It's very, very important when parents teach their children, Hilchos Shabbos especially, it comes up there most prominently, but in general, what's a halacha, what's a minhag, what's a deraisa, what's a derabanan? And that's I think, where the lacking was. Yeah.
It's a big problem today. I think even for adults, we don't really know on what level the things that we're doing is something deraisa, something is rabbinic, something is a minhag, because it gets so all mixed up, and then you have something that's really from the Torah, yeah, and we're not following it. You know, I consider that to be a big problem. We don't have enough knowledge, and we're not teaching our children properly.
Yeah, I think we need to do more. I think we need to do more. I'll tell you that also, there's a book called Off the Derech. Off the Derech is a book written by a woman named Farinak Margulies, who wrote a PhD dissertation on why people, you know, leave the fold. And one of the reasons, there's no main reason. I think every chapter was a different, you know, different reason with different vignettes and stories that she culled throughout her research, was that people were educated incorrectly. And they were told that watching TV, for example, is like, it's like you're worshiping Avodah Zarah, or putting makeup on Shabbos, which is a problem. It's an Issur D'Rabbanan. Is worse than eating chazir. So when this happened, what would people do? They would like walk by, I don't know, they'd be at work and they'd see a TV on and they'd say like, and they'd enjoy it. Not we're not talking about the nature of this, but educationally how it comes out. So what did the person feel about themselves? They felt like, I just worshiped an idol. I literally just worship. And eventually, if they come to just enjoy whatever they were watching, what are they going to say? If I'm worshiping idols, I can do X, Y, or Z. If it comes down in such a stark way, then we need to think about the ramifications of that and how people equate, you know, one thing to the next. Not to say that everything's kosher or not kosher on a TV. We have to think about how it's taught and how it's presented to the next generation. What also comes up here, a little bit parenthetically, but the mother is told that you can't be involved in any tumah as well. So what is parenthetically or learned out from this story is the following. Is a machlokes. Can an eshes kohen, a woman that's married to a kohen, who is pregnant, can she go to a cemetery? Can she go to a cemetery? Is that allowed? So the Rokeach famously wrote that a woman is allowed. This is quoted in the Magen Avraham in Or HaChaim Shemem Gimel. Why? Because number one, maybe the baby is a girl. It's called a sfeik sfeika. You have a double down. On one hand, the baby might be a girl. On the other hand, the baby might be a boy. But even if it's a boy, there's a suffeik. Again, we daven this doesn't happen. There's a suffeik nafel, that it might be a miscarriage. So because of that suffeik, that sfeik sfeika, the rokeach allowed women, eshes kohen women, to go to the Beis HaKvaros, to the cemetery. Not everybody agrees with these two sfeikos. Not everybody agrees that a woman can go. In general, women that are pregnant generally have the minhag of not going. But that is related over here. And others say that maybe they reject this entire proof, because who says that a baby, a womb is considered tameh, can contract tumah, but maybe it's related to what is told to Shimshon, that mom, you need to start doing what you're educating your child to do. Not because your child's going to contract tuma, but we need to educate. You need to, if you're going to teach your child what to do, it's not enough to tell them what to do. You have to model it for them. So maybe that's the limud here. The limud is a little bit different. Then becomes a more of a minhag, not a very strict halacha. But there's more to say about that. We'll leave it there. So, kihina harav yuladet bein, you're going to have a child. Good. He's going to be nizir lekim min habeten, and v'hu yachel oshias yisrael miyad plishtim, and he is going to save the Jewish people from the hands of the plishtim. But tavo ha'isha, she was so excited to hear all of this news and a little bit nervous probably. But tomer le'isha le'mor, she told her husband, "You're never going to believe, honey. What happened? How was your day?" "Oh, same day. It was okay." Right? Like, what did he talk about back in the, what were they doing? So he says, "You're never going to believe what happened to me." Isha Lokim Ba'ilai. Isha Lokim, a man of God. It's not clear whether she thought this was a Navi or a Malach. Umareu Kamara Malach. He looked like a Malach. So it sounded like she thought it was a person. No Ram Ma'od. An amazing, awesome experience. Velo Shiltu Amy Zehu. I didn't ask him his name. I didn't ask him where he came from. Veshmo, and he never told me. Vayomerli, and he told me the following. Now listen to this pasuk, and you tell me what is missing. Right, this past week we had Niketz. Paro had two dreams, and then he reported the dreams to Yosef. He left out details of the story on purpose there, because he wanted to intuit whether Yosef can figure it out on his own. If you're such a big hotshot interpreter of dreams, and he did, and that's why Paro believed him. Now here, I don't think that's the case over here, but listen carefully and see what details are missing. Ve'yomerli, hina chara ve'yuladipen. He told me, "I'm going to have a child. Vata al tishti yayin v'shechar v'atochli kol tuma." Don't drink, you know, wine, alcoholic beverages. Don't drink anything. Don't eat anything that's tame. Ki nizir l'kim yanar. He's going to be a nizir l'kim, min habetem, from the womb, ad yomo, so until the day that he dies. Anything missing from this pasuk? Is there anything missing here that she is not reporting that was told to her from the mouth? Number one, the Malach opened up by saying, "Hinach akara, you are barren." We discussed last week that this could be a point of tension between a husband and wife over whose quote unquote responsibility or fault is the infertility. We should never use that language no matter what, even if we do know facts on the ground. Who is? It's not one's fault. That's why Kadosh Baruch Hu made you. That's the way it is. It's up to the couple to work on this together. But she does not share that bit of information that she is an akara. And number two, that the destiny of this child. The destiny of the child is Hu Yachelo, she has Yisrami Yaplishnim. That he's going to be the one to save the Jewish people from the hands of the Plishtim. So why did she leave out these two pieces of information? What do we think? What's significant here about these two pieces of information?
He would have thought she was dreaming. You know, it's like too preposterous.
Which part? The second, you see, the second piece of information that would have been too much for him to handle.
Well, both of it. You know, first of all, if they were arguing about whose fault it is that she didn't get pregnant, yeah, you know, she didn't want to admit that it's hers.
Yeah,
and then saying that, you know, her child is going to save all the Jews. You know, it's like, who would believe that?
Right. Yeah. So very practically, number one. The Medrash writes this. Yossi's on target with the Medrash. Shlo ratza lagalos tilkula. She didn't want to reveal. She was embarrassed about it. She didn't want to share that about her. And secondly, regarding the plishtim, so Yossi suggested very nicely, right, that this maybe is too much for him to accept at this time. Others say that she was afraid that if maybe word would eventually get out, husband, would be so excited. He'd be sitting in shul with his friends. You're never going to believe what happens. My son is going to be the one that's going to save us with Plishtim. What are the Plishtim going to do? We know from Mitzrayim. What did Mitzrayim do when they had an astrologer? Who knows if the astrologer was even telling the truth? From the water, right? The guy's going to, right? A boy is going to be born, and he's going to be, he's going to save the Jewish people, and he's going to be destroyed by water. So what did the Mitzrayim do on a hunch? They killed every baby boy. So she thought that maybe if the word gets out, if I reveal this information, then they might kill my son. They might take my son away, which we know happened later. But after the damage was done, where Shimshon did take care of thousands of Plishtim, that could be what's going on here. Then I saw in Mishmas Ozahav, this beautiful Sefer, on Sefer Shoftim, he writes that it could be that Hainuhach, that these two reasons really go together. The reason that, or the revelation that she was the Akara, and number one. Number two, that he was not, that he was going to save the Plishtim, save the Jewish people from the Plishtim. Those are very similar things. What does that mean? That once she wasn't going to reveal one, she couldn't reveal the second. Where did it come from? Where did his strength come from that he was going to be the one to save the Jewish people from the Plishtim? So he argues that comes directly from her tenacity, from her, you know, willing to, you know, overcome a tremendous amount of adversity and grit in her life, that she was an outcome. She persevered. She overcame. She survived and she went through this. So because that became part of Shimshon's DNA, and that made Shimshon into the Moshiach Shel Yisrael. So once she wasn't going to reveal one, the second one also, you know, I would say, went away, you know, fell by the wayside.
Rabbi.
Yeah.
According to the first answer, I think it just compounds the relationship that we see that the two of them had from the start, of pointing fingers with each other. Because in any solid relationship between a husband and wife, I don't think that would have been something that would be hidden. That's really unsound. If they had a sound relationship, that was something that the wife would want to share with their husband. But if their relationship is not on sound ground, which we see, it seems that it wasn't on such sound ground, that would be something that she might want to hide.
Yep, I hear you. Right, she would be able to trust him also that the Plishtim secret would not go out. Correct. Last thought for today that I'm going to leave you off with is from the Ramami Panu. Ramami Panu was a Sephardi Kabbalist, and he writes that Slavonis, Eshes, Mrs. Manoach, the woman, the protagonist in our story, was a Gilgul Neshama of the wife of On Ben Peles. Who was On Ben Peles? On Ben Peles, if you look at the beginning of Parshas Korach,
yeah,
the Torah tells us that who was on Korach's side, who was part of the Machlokes of Korach Adasso, Own was one of the people. Korach, Dasan, Aviram, a lot of Sheva Rubens, Mitzia Ha'eda, and Own Ben Peles. And then when they list the people again, Own is not there. Why is he not there? So Chazal tell us that his wife, Mrs. Own, kept him busy and ultimately said to him, what do you need to be involved in Machlokas for? What do you need this for? This is not what we do as a family. And ultimately, she saved him from the brink, from being swallowed up into the earth, and she saved him. So this is the same neshama that's in this woman, in Slavonis, in Eshes Manoach, because the same construct. She was able to, you'll see how she saves her husband. She's somebody that's unique in that way. That's maybe destined to marry a guy that's not on par, or maybe destined to lift up the guy that she is married to. And she educates that we can't be involved in machlokas. It's not a healthy thing. It's really something we need to stay away from. The Vilna Gaon wrote in a letter, very powerful words. He wrote that for every moment that one withholds saying Lashon Hara, or if one withholds bringing up words, divrei riv, words of rechilas or machlokas, gossip, or words that can cause a machlokas, one merits the Or HaGanus, the secret light that is destined to be put away for the tzaddikim in the next world. And that's where this woman comes from. That's her roots. And that's my bracha too, and Zosa Chanukah, that we should all be Zocha to merit this special light of the Or HaGanus in our own lives. We're going to stop here for today. Wish everybody a Freilich and Chanukah, a Zos Chanukah. It should be a very special and holy day. We should enjoy, we should share simchas together as Baruch Hashem.
Okay, don't forget we have a second shiur today.